here. Dr. Thomas is here. Bill Barnett's here. Kathy Sulick.
Donna and I are here.
Okay. Shauna's here. Elizabeth's here. Chris Nunez. Jeff's here, right?
Yep.
Sarah's here. Tina.
Yep, I'm here.
Long time no see. Tatiana.
She won't.
I don't think she will be able to join us.
Right. She's here. Yay. Peter had to go home. Deepak. Johan Everhart. I'm sorry, did he say? Yeah, he's there. Okay, good deal. Tom and Kathy are here. Faye. John's here. Hannah Kidney. Dan Savage's here.
Here.
Dale and Bill and Jill. Okay, we've got enough people to get going. All right, this is the last time I'm going to make a plea, but if you'd like to contribute to the Tim Cudd Scholarship Fund, if you could please email or send Jill a check, that would be great. This is the last time we're going to do it, and then we're going to send what we got. And everybody is prepared for our Washington meeting, I am hoping, and one can start making travel plans for that. And Jill, we're meeting at the Hilton Hotel, I believe.
Yes, and I've been in contact with them. I've submitted all of the room requests. They're tweaking a couple of errors, and they're going to send me that list back hopefully till today. So you don't need to do anything. Your rooms are all set.
We're at the Hilton?
Yes, the Hilton Rockville, and the meeting will be at the NIAAA offices on Tuesday and Wednesday, and then at a conference room within the hotel on Thursday.
If you're bringing extra people that we don't know about, please let us know so we can modify the room request information for the hotel. We get kind of locked into a contract. Modifying that's not always the easiest thing, but Jill got us great rates. So.
And free breakfast.
And free breakfast. So.
Parking and internet and a shuttle because it's going to be the depths of winter.
So please follow up on that. In regard to that, I know it's still a little early, but prior to the meeting, as you all know, most of you know, we put together a compendium of the progress reports, and they're distributed to all the members in the Science Advisory Board. And this is basically how we judge where projects are going, how they're doing, whether they're meeting their goals. And those are going to be due December 17th. So please start working on those because Jill has sent out a kind of a format that we would like to use. I think she'll send out font of guide and everything else. If she hasn't already, yeah, she has. It's Arial 11, and we like it to kind of be consistent, but regardless, we always find that we have to make modifications when we put them all together prior to distribution. So if people could start putting those together, I would appreciate that. We now have, hopefully you know this too, the Google Docs is now available to plot progress on some of the projects. And unfortunately, we don't have any data entered in there yet, but we're going to be monitoring that closely. Really hasn't been any new data added in quite some time, and I'm not really sure why. I know some reasons, switching from phase two to phase three, etc., but still there are kids who don't have dysmorphology exams that need them. I think 3D camera, we may be behind on that with some kids who have being seen but no pictures, but I'm not quite sure on that. But so I'm urging everybody to kind of to move along, because we're already, because of the start date being moved forward or backwards, you know, we're 2 months into it. So we're halfway through the project year already, and it doesn't appear that any new data has really been collected. We've also had some difficulties with material transfer and getting samples to, for example, POC. So I would like at the end of our year to show some progress, and unless we start moving on that, it's going to be a little on the slim side. And given the budgetary issues, the fact that we don't know where we're going to be a year from now, what institute we're going to be in, and how we're going to have within that institute, I think we better on our running shoes and get this thing moving. All right, the major objective for today is to continue with our PowerPoint presentation so that Kathy and Tom, who are both on the call, can start letting the world know about all the great things that CFAS has done. And I do want to mention that I've been doing a few talks lately on CFAS and update, and it's fairly impressive the work that we have gotten out and the number of papers that are coming out. And so I'm pleased with the progress that is making it out into the literature and being shared with the rest of the scientific community. And so I'm real pleased about that. And there have been a number of very significant findings. I think Elizabeth had a news release on her paper. Sarah's paper was mentioned in pediatrics. So there's lots of good things happening, but we really need to also get moving on this year's work in our new funding period. All right, I'm going to turn this over now to Jennifer, who's been handling the PowerPoints. And, Jen, it's all yours.
Okay, so we had gotten through about half of the projects, but we still have several to go through. I have Tina, Kathy, and Bill specifically today, and Michael, if you want to maybe look at some of the slides we have of your work. But Tina, are you – I know you're at a meeting. Do you have time constraints?
I have to be off at 11.
Okay, well – so why don't you just, why don't we have you go first if you want to bring your slides up.
Okay, so do I do that by bringing them up on my desktop? Okay, that's going to take me a couple of minutes. Hold on just a second. Because I'm at it.
I could do it from my side. Jill, you control who it goes to, correct?
Yep, I just clicked on Tina. Should I click on you?
Yeah.
Have her share her desktop and load them up.
Can you put them up, then, Jill or Jennifer?
Yeah, I'm putting them up. So I'll forward to your slides on here.
They're not. I'm not seeing them on my WebEx. Why I'm asking.
So Jennifer, after you get it loaded up, you'll want to click on that quick start share desktop.
Oh, share my desktop. Okay.
There you go.
There it is.
And then go full page.
Okay.
Okay. So I did this just extremely simple with the idea that this was going to be to a layperson audience. So just began with the prevention of fetal alcohol spectrum disorder slide, like everybody else has, leading known preventable cause of developmental disabilities. Not all babies born to mothers who drink alcohol are affected by the alcohol to the same degree. Other factors, such as mother's nutrition, may be important in modifying alcohol's effect on the child's learning ability and growth. And then Do you have to advance it, Jennifer?
Yeah. Do we have notes on these? I mean, these are pretty self-explanatory, but so maybe not.
So maybe I can run through it once, and then you guys can make comments on the overall approach if you think it's too simplistic.
Jen, rather than be in presentation mode, why don't you...
Right, I want to be in this mode
and
here.
Are there notes on the bottom of this or anything? No.
That's what I was asking. I don't think there are.
There are not.
Okay.
Okay, and then the second slide just moves on to talking about the importance of mother's nutrition, if improving mother's nutrition can help reduce effects of alcohol in unplanned pregnancies, a nutrition intervention could be implemented along with alcohol reduction interventions at potentially low cost.
Why does that make a difference?
I think it makes a difference because the majority of exposures in pregnancy are going to occur in a pregnancy that's not planned.
But my point is this, that if a nutrition intervention is going to work, it would work whether or not it was planned.
That's true, I agree totally. I just think that it has the most potential in terms of numbers to impact pregnancies where in an unrecognized pregnancy. Do you think we should just take unplanned out?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, let's do it. Okay, so that. Thank you, Jennifer. All right, and I thought it was important to maintain in there along with alcohol reduction intervention so it's not perceived as a panacea and that you can drink as much as you want.
Good point.
Okay,
should it be pregnancy and not pregnancies?
Improving. Yeah, because it's single mother.
Yeah.
You're right. Okay, anything else?
Nope.
Next slide. What have we learned so far through CIFASD? That pregnant women who drink alcohol tend to have lower levels of nutrients that are essential for the development of the baby, such as zinc, copper, iron, folate, B12, and vitamin D. Nothing there? Okay, next slide.
Is those data published or no?
We had some data published in the article that Carl has in Biofactors. So you want a reference there?
Yeah, I think that would be helpful.
Okay.
And you can, add that later on, but I think if we have it, we mentioned the publications.
Got it.
If you go two columns, maybe you can make those a little more readable from the back of a room.
Yeah, it's kind of jammed. Okay.
Okay,
we'll do. And then next slide. Again, what have we learned so far through CIFASD? That a simple prenatal vitamin supplement provided to women who have already been drinking early in pregnancy may help prevent more severe learning disabilities. I don't know if that's the correct term to use in these children. Sarah, do you think there is a better word to use?
What test there? They use, and again, this is just on the...
based on the Bailey.
Based on the Bailey's. I'm not sure I'd say it was a learning disability if it's a Bailey's.
Developmental
delay?
More severe.
I can hardly hear you, John.
Developmental delay? Okay.
I think that's what the Bailey does.
Yeah, I think that's a better...
More severe developmental delays, if that's what we want.
They reduce the severity?
Or lessen the impact. Yeah, the more severe I'm hung up on is...
Well, I'm also hung up on delays as though it's going to go away.
Yeah, exactly, and that's the problem with the test. Well...
Impaired development?
Or developmental impairments, reduce developmental impairments.
Or disabilities.
Or maybe reduce the risk of
risk of...
You want to say neurodevelopmental problems or...
Yeah, you could say that, of neurodevelopmental...
It's pretty vague.
...problems or...
Yeah, I mean, for a lay audience, I mean...
Yeah. as opposed to something like deficits, which sounds not so lay.
I
have kind of a practical consideration with respect to this whole slide.
Uh-huh.
And that is, if you have a woman in the audience who has been drinking,
uh-huh,
they see this, that a multivitamin might help.
Right.
You can see some thinking that if one is good, 10 are better. And most multivitamins have a lot of vitamin A in them. And too much vitamin A, as everyone knows, is probably worse than alcohol.
Right. Hopefully they all contain beta-carotene now, but you're absolutely right. So should we say a simple prenatal, how about a simple daily prenatal vitamin supplement?
So then they're going to eat 20 of them a day.
Yeah. Or
the recommended doses. Or
in the recommended dose? Yeah. Yeah, that sounds good.
Simple prenatal vitamin supplement at the recommended dose.
Yeah, that sounds good. Okay, anything else on that?
Maybe just say reduce the risk or risks. I'm not quite sure which.
Is it risk or is it the level of developmental problems? Doesn't really remove the risk, does it?
Well, the problem is that's why I was struggling with more severe, too. I mean, I don't think you can get into gradations here.
Yeah.
All right. Well, why don't we just leave it that Tina's going to modify that further so that it's more accurate?
Okay.
All right.
All right. I'll look at what we could replace risk with.
We got
some
more to do today.
Okay. Next slide. What does this mean? Optimum prevention strategy for women is to stop drinking alcohol prior to conception, but 50% or more of pregnancies are unplanned.
That works.
So this goes. Pardon me?
That works there.
Okay.
Optimal is an adjective.
Oh. Thank you, Dale. Okay. So you want optimum to be optimal? Okay.
Yes.
Optimally.
Optimally, you would like to be optimal. Thank you.
Sure.
Okay. Okay, next slide. And so in the future, nutritional intervention may help reduce, and here's the, I can play around with that word, alcohol-related and maybe learning problems, maybe neurodevelopmental problems, replace learning with that, in children born to women. And do you want me to take out the who do not plan pregnancy and just replace that in children born to women who have consumed alcohol in pregnancy?
Yeah, I think you can take that out there.
Okay.
Putting prenatal in front of alcohol help?
Yeah.
Reduce prenatal alcohol-related learning.
Okay.
Prenatal alcohol-related?
Yeah. Okay. And then I think it's the last slide.
Sorry, is it or is that my eyes?
Oh, actually, no. The rest, I'm not sure, Jen, why these got on here. That is the last slide.
Okay, that's the last one. Okay.
The older presentation. So
right, I think I have the older slides still on here. So.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I, this is pretty obviously, you know, no data, and it's very, very simple. And I don't know if that's sufficient for Kathy and Tom's purposes.
I think they're very good. They're very clear, straightforward.
Okay, so I'll make the other modifications and put it back in the Dropbox. And if anybody else has any other comments, please let me know.
Okay.
Yeah, they're great. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, so Kathy, do you want to show yours? Do you want to pull yours up on your computer, or do you want me to pull it up here?
Donna's got them right here.
Okay.
See, I'm trying to switch. It's just not accepting it. Hold on one second.
You have to close yours, Jen.
Normally that doesn't matter, but... Okay, I'm there.
So can you see the slides yet?
No.
No, we're still on Tina's.
Still waiting, okay.
Do I have to push something here, Jill?
Oh,
and if so, what do I do?
Actually.
No, I had to push it. I was just looking for Dr. Sulik, so now I've got Dr. O'Leary Moore, so we should be okay.
I still said, oh, never mind.
All right, so now, yeah.
Okay, so I'm just going to, should I put it in this mode or the other?
With notes, so we can see.
So essentially what we've done, we've updated these slides just this morning, so I did upload those to the Dropbox. And most of the slides are pictures, but we have included in the notes section essentially word for word what we think the narrative could be. So I just go through and read what we've got.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay.
Or can you pull it up so we can actually see it?
Yeah.
It's kind of cut off a little bit.
You sure you want us to read this to you? It's pretty self-explanatory.
No, I think I think everyone can read through it, and knowing you guys, it's.
Is it clear to Kathy and Tom?
Yes, I think so.
So that one, I mean, everyone's seen that a zillion times. It should be pretty clear. So maybe we can go to the next one.
Well, wait a minute. One question. I mean, for as a first slide, would it be helpful if you had a normal face and you almost presented this as a 2x2 box where here's the human on the top level and here's the mouse comparison on the next level?
We could do that.
I mean, I think then the comparison that you're trying to make, I think, would be more readily apparent to someone who isn't familiar with looking at faces.
Okay. Yeah, that's easy for us to do.
Yeah, I figured it would be, but, yeah.
Okay. We might use one of our own kids who we think are normal.
we'll leave that up to you to figure out.
So I think unless someone has comments, we'll just keep our mouths shut, and when you're ready to go on to the next one, let us know.
Is it possible in the mouse images to make that red a little brighter so it stands out more?
Yeah, it's a little hard to see.
I think when you put it on full screen, it's a lot easier. Let's move it to full screen.
Well, and then the other point is, I mean, you have two examples of the alcohol exposed, and would one suffice? And if it was even organized the way the face slide was, would that facilitate comprehension?
I worry about putting just one because I think it's important to show that there are a variety of degrees of effect.
But my concern, I guess part of the reason for raising it is these issues, I mean, the subtle nature of these may be difficult to discern because, you know, they're small relative to the whole slide. And if you had fewer images, could you blow them up so they would be more readily apparent, particularly in the back of a room if someone's looking
at the slide? Well, we could just use the more severe one, but I don't know that, I mean, it would make the point, but I don't know that it's fair.
I understand why you're saying that, Kathy, but it seems like the images have to be made bigger somehow. Maybe you use more of the white space around the illustrations to help, but I'm concerned about people squinting their eyes and trying to and missing it altogether if it's not large enough to readily see the point.
Can you put that
on full screen?
Even on full screen.
You think it's a problem?
It's better, obviously, on full screen, but maybe it's all right. Maybe it's all right. But you probably could expand the images and just use more of your white space around the illustration just to make them as big as possible.
All right, we can work on that.
Yeah.
Kathy?
Yep.
Hi. Would it be possible to add a sentence in the notes addressing the most common question that we're going to get? Because when people see this, of course, the question is using neuroimaging to detect fetal alcohol effects in humans, and is that being done, and if not, why not, and can you diagnose using neuroimaging techniques?
I think Elizabeth has a slide that kind of says that it's not. I don't know if she has it included in this or not.
Okay. Because that's always, now again, I don't know how exactly these will be used or if we'll share these with affiliates or what have you, but that's always, as all of you know, the question that is going to be asked. So it's really great for people like me that are training that, you know, to make sure that we're reporting it in the most factual way, that we're all saying the same thing.
Yeah, I think it is in
for us to add
slides,
these are severe cases and we wouldn't expect to be able to diagnose all FASs based on this kind of imaging.
But, right.
Yeah.
And do we see a future in using that technique to assist with diagnosis? Is that even feasible or is it just expensive?
Yeah, in the future, I think that's one of our goals potentially, or to use the imaging that we're doing in the research to find connections between measures, say, in the neurocognition or the face that, you know, that can predict what's in the brain.
Good, because that's what I've been saying, but I had no idea if that was actually true or not. That was true.
It's not true today, but
it's
part of our goal.
Your goal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Kathy, I can add a slide that kind of explicitly states that. It is mentioned somewhat in Elizabeth's slides already, but I can just add a filler slide that kind of makes that point.
Yeah, that's great. Either that or in the notes, either way. That's perfect. Thank you.
Good. Yeah, let's go to the next one.
One of those slides, I think that when combined with other ones, for example, on critical periods, will make more sense. And, you know, we'll have those other slides hopefully available of why timing of exposure is important.
But will Kathy and Tom be able to explain? I mean, how comfortable do you feel about trying to explain the right side of the slide? Even with the text?
Not at all, for me. I don't know about you, Tom.
Well, I'm just reading it now.
No, I'd have to. Yeah, and I think that the notes, although, of course, they're very comprehensive, it might be helpful to break them down a little bit to make it a little more user-friendly.
So would you prefer this slide without the right panel, just with the what's on the left panel, and just leave it at that?
Possibly. I'm reading through it real quick here. Possibly, yeah. I think, what do you think?
You know, I think that we could probably have two versions of this slide.
That's a good idea.
One without it. And then depending upon how you want to present Peter Hammond.
Who the audience is.
Because with Peter Hammond's data, this makes sense. You know, that
mm-hmm.
And so if you have two slides and then you're able to pick and choose.
That's true. That's
right. Okay. But even with Peter's, the problem is, you know, most people are not going to recognize those particular features of a mouse face. But,
well, I mean, it takes a lot of setting up, and then you have to explain the colors and.
Mm-hmm.
It is a lot.
The lateral depth and vertical. I mean, it would be. I think even some of us would be a little intimidated at trying to convey this to a lay audience, anyways.
Yeah. If we have both, then you have the option, I guess. So.
Right.
Okay, we'll make two separate ones.
I guess the one thing I think about is if you lose the right side, and then we're left with just what's on the left, I think a layperson looking at that gestational day 8.5 exposure, I mean, even for me, I think it's very hard to see that there's a difference between it and control. And so a layperson might then come away with the thought that later exposure doesn't matter. And that's one thing that the right side does make very compellingly.
Well, so, yeah, I can see why you say that, because the day 8.5 exposure is much more subtle, and it's hard to visualize it that way. But I think by adding the kid at the top who was very severely affected in the way that we know that the day 8 exposure affects facial development, we were hoping would sort of compensate for that.
Yeah, no, and that's quite compelling. The child, it's harder to recognize the difference in the mouse, though.
Well, it just is, and I can't make that any difference. It's hard to recognize. That's why we need these more sophisticated techniques.
Right, and I think that if we want to make the point that later exposure has an effect, then the child makes the point very nicely, and the images on the right make it very nicely. I'm just saying that the mouse images on the left are more, it would take a lot more explaining to a layperson to say that there are alterations in that phase.
I think what we need to do is in the text, we need to say that the changes with the later exposure are subtle, but they're just because they're subtle doesn't mean that they're not severe, have severe consequences. They're just hard to pick up, and we can use more sophisticated techniques to analyze them.
Yeah, that might be a nice transition to some of the other work.
And again, it's probably important to point out that the GD7 and 8.5 is still the first human trimester equivalent, and when these structural changes are more likely to arise. But as you were saying, the follow-through is that there's functional brain damage later in development, even in the absence of these features.
I'm noticing we didn't say in the little text at the bottom that day 8 corresponds to about week 4 in the human, and we'll still add that.
Yeah.
A take-home message.
Can you put a picture in there of the embryo at that time?
Well, we could, but it's just a little dot of something, and people won't recognize it as an embryo. They'll just sort of be looking at it saying, what in the heck is this?
Well, what about
unless you have it large and then shrink it down.
But it would be, it doesn't, I mean, it's just a little circle of cells, and
well,
people don't think that that's what an embryo looks like.
You know, I find that, I use one of your slides showing the mouse embryo at various stages and the human embryo kind of at similar stages, and that's a very impressive slide for people.
Oh, okay, we can add that one. I think that's a great suggestion.
It really does convey that, at this stage,
mm-hmm.
producing these effects in the mouse, and look how similar this is in the human. And why wouldn't you expect it to also be equally affected,
Mm-hmm.
So.
Another thing that I'm just thinking, Kathy, I remember you're talking about the little Petri dishes with the sea monkeys. I mean, I don't know if that, I just think that's really cool. And if, you could get it across that there's this educational component, or maybe it's not really CFAST, but.
We've just finally gotten our latest high school science curriculum onto a DVD. And that uses fish, where the kids actually measure the distance between the eyes and the fish
mm-hmm.
as an indicator of the size of the forebrain.
I don't know. Does anyone else think that's cool stuff to get out there?
It would require a whole lot of explaining.
Oh, okay.
I think it might be nicer if we just give NOFAS the curriculum and so that they can tell people where to access it if they want it.
Yeah, I think that would be cool.
Yes, yeah.
Okay, we'll do that.
Yeah, thank you.
So one, I'm still trying to understand how these various presentations hang together, but just thinking about this one in isolation for the lay public, it seems like on one of these slides or a separate slide, there needs to be some kind of statement about why it's important. What's the significance of being able to model these things in animals? Because to someone who's just hearing about this for the first time, they may say, well, this is interesting. You can see the same things in mice you see in humans. So what's the point of doing this in mice?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I can anticipate that question, or at least people thinking about it, whether they ask or not.
So maybe what we could do is in between our first and second slide, I think the first slide definitely tells you that you can create in mice what you see in people. And then maybe a second slide can say that using an animal model, you can more accurately determine the consequence of exposure at particular points in time, study dose-response relationships, only we'll put that in lay terms.
And right now, in terms of the overall kind of slide set, it's just positioned, and obviously when it's being used by NOFAST, you know, they can be used in whatever order, but we are putting it right after Peter's work so that it can be seen, you know, the relevance can be seen.
This is ringing bells for me, too, with people who are concerned about animal welfare. I mean, just to make it clear that it needs to be done in animal models.
Mm-hmm.
But what we won't be able to discern from just the human work, and why the
right, so that people know this is, you know.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, again, another filler slide that just kind of specifically addresses that can be added pretty easily. I can do that.
Little word slide.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think that would be good.
Speaking of animals.
Well, I think also make the point that you can control for all the other substances and issues, and people do get that.
Okay, well, we'll try to spiff it up. Thank you for your input.
Thank you.
Thanks. Okay, so we have Bill, we have Informatics, a couple of slides from them.
Okay, so how do you want to do this?
Do you want to show it on your?
Yeah. I get it from my desktop.
Screen. Okay.
All right. We really have three, and you know we don't have pretty pictures in Informatics, and you don't want to see our pictures.
Hmm.
So what I started out was because we represent all of the projects, at least all the clinical ones. Just to talk about it, how are the consortium's ability to compare the data across many populations, and that's really the population and also many kinds of studies. And then just listing some of the numbers that we have that you guys have delivered so far in terms of, you know, 2,000 variables from 2,900 children across 15 clinical research projects. Just give some people an idea of the scope of the consortium. And so I thought it was important to give them those numbers. And then the third point is that our data structures can be used by any FAS researcher, so we're providing standards. Maybe we should say standards rather than structures to extend the impact of CFAS research. And then that these data are going to be available for future research, such as genetic studies. In other words, these data are not going away. They're going to be available into the future. So those are, I thought, kind of the high-level value of the informatics core, and if there are other things that you guys see, I'd be happy to put them in there.
Now, Faye did send comments, just a few like wording changes and such that I can share with you. They're actually already input into the main slide set, but maybe that's something that we can look at afterwards.
Yeah, I just pulled this down from there.
Oh, okay.
So we'll sort it out. Okay.
Okay.
And then, here's what our core particularly has accomplished. We have a central repository, again, 2,900 research subjects, controlled vocabulary. I don't know if that term needs definition better for the lay audience. Input and upload tools that automatically collect data, cross-query tools that support complex data querying across studies, and then a data browsing service for quality improvement. And then the last slide here is just to kind of report of, hey, here's where we are, that just shows some of the numbers across the studies. It's kind of an arch. This slide, I think, has some problems. I think on the left, it does show all the studies we've done. Along the top, the three-letter acronyms for the different sites are going to be completely, opaque to any reader. But there are some totals down the side that they can look at. So, this could be made more user-friendly. The only other thing that I could think of to get this sense of geographical scope would be to maybe put up a map of the world with the sites located on it, because I don't know if any of the other projects do that. I don't know if that's the administrative core that's responsible for showing the geographic scope.
I like the map thing. I think this will get lost on the lay public, and I think they'll be more impressed with seeing all the dots around the world where information is coming from. So the numbers of how many cases you got at the different sites is probably not going to jazz that group, lay
right. That makes sense, but I don't know if that's something that Ed's going to be presenting as part of the administrative core as the overall, but we could certainly do it here.
Maybe your map could show, like you're showing here, the number of subjects per location. What if you – so Ed has dots on a map, but you could have sort of density
or
showing
bigger,
that.
Bigger and smaller dots, if you want to somehow.
Yeah, that would be a helpful visual.
That would be kind of cool, actually.
Yeah.
Yes, we could still do that. So, do you have a world map that shows our sites?
I do.
Yeah.
Okay, so I will take that world map, and then I will replace this last slide with one that just has circles of varying sizes representing the kind of size of the total number of subjects at each site.
Yeah, now the map has sites that we've been involved in since the beginning, so some of them will not be here, I don't think. I'll send you a copy of that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't think it matters if they're current. I mean, No.
Or you could use different colored dots if you want to represent something else besides NU size and color. If you wanted to use that to make different points. Can you remind me, because if you go back to don't go back to the first slide, but the central organizing theme here is trying to relate brain, face, and behavior. And, of course, that's a big part of what the informatics core is doing. But is that a concept, that triad, that, should permeate a lot of the presentations, and this is what each of these components brings to that triad in terms of trying to advance either the preclinical or the clinical effort?
Well, we do have that summary slide as part of the administrative core that talks about those relationships, but it's not really necessarily carried over into the individual slides.
But I wonder if it would help, to people to see how the various project activities relate to that sort of strategic effort. But I don't know, just a thought.
Okay. I can play around with that, because maybe I can use that slide and kind of modify it as the talk progresses.
Don't we have
and bring it in repeatedly?
Isn't there a figure from the grant application that shows how each project relates to the aim? Or I know I had one for my application, so it would be specific to me. Tatiana had one. I think Ed might have included a version of that in the administrative core that would show the interrelation to the projects and how they – I'm sure it'll need to be modified, but I think it might be a good starting place.
Okay.
So from my own perspective, as someone who's not an expert in this area, that's what stuck with me. So,
I'm sorry. What was that, Bill?
I'm saying as a person who's not an expert in this area, So, you know, as a naive person, that's the thing that stuck with me, the relationships of face, brain, and behavior. And that's what came out as, I think, a powerful message that for someone who's not expert like myself.
Well, yeah, and I think that's what you want to – I mean, maybe they'll walk away remembering that triad if they don't remember anything else and why it's important, you know, that research is being done. And they're not separate endeavors.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other comments then on the? I do have some of Michael's slides as well.
I can see now. I just got on.
Oh. We could just go over those real quickly. We only have about 5 minutes left. I think those are the last ones for us to go over based on the people that are on the call today. And I would probably have to show those on my desktop, right?
You're up, Jen.
Okay. Hold on here. Okay. So these were some slides you had sent before, Michael.
Yep.
Can everyone see that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think we probably would want to have maybe some notes there that would be helpful to Kathy and Tom.
Yeah. Take it, I can't click and write notes, right?
No. I'll write for you in so we make sure we put add the notes.
Okay.
And any comments at all?
Should it be fetal alcohol syndrome resembles the effects of L1 gene mutation?
Yes.
Okay.
Consequences or something.
Is there anything that could be said about what is an L1 gene, or are we just going to assume that they think it's a gene?
It's all a question of how much space you want to devote to this. It's a little bit arcane, and I think the take-home message for most scientifically literate people who look at this is that there's an important target molecule that is affected by alcohol, and that you can identify where in the molecule alcohol affects it, and you can design drugs that block that action of alcohol on the molecule, and lo and behold, they also prevent birth defects in mice.
Well, I'm wondering if maybe for the lay audience, you don't need to say it's the L1 gene, but certain genes, and then something like what you just said, Michael. Like,
right, ditto that.
Right.
Well, I guess what's specific about L1 is just that there are kids out there whose brains look a lot like fetal alcohol brains, and that's the reason to look at this particular molecule. And then some of the later slides are going to be showing specific effects on what alcohol does to L1.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe if you run through the slides, back up, and then...
Right.
I appreciate that this is not... necessarily intuitive, but I think it's something that identifies work that's being done at a molecular level.
So this is a slide, and I made some modifications with some animations kind of showing that the cells cluster together when they have the L1 molecule. And then if you add a little bit of alcohol, it disrupts it, and a little more alcohol, it disrupts it more.
Yeah,
does that make sense, or is that still too confusing?
No, I think both slides make sense as long as we have the notes page to, you know, to explain just how both of you have just done so with the past two slides.
I'll write a script.
Okay. And then this is just, well, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, Jen, if you can go back to the one with the cells. Yeah, I think you need to replace the millimolars with some measure that the public will be able to relate to.
Those little drawings that Jennifer put in there indicate the number of drinks.
Oh, I couldn't see what those were. I'm sorry.
But if you were...
So it's like one drink and two...
With a wine glass in the...
Wine glass, yeah. Okay.
See, those glasses look empty.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep, and with two glasses, you'll really get to 110 millimolar? I mean, megs per deciliter? Sorry.
In women, one glass could get you to 5 millimolar, and probably three get you to 25 millimolar.
Okay, I can make some of those modifications to try and make it more clear as well.
Wine glass two slides forward that maybe you can extract.
Right.
Or maybe just say, you know, one drink of drinks, whatever.
Yeah.
Okay.
25 millimolars looks like the control.
Yeah,
well, that's a control.
This is what it should look like, though, is this one here. So probably, again, these titles need to be altered so that they're easily understood.
Because
this is what it should look like. I guess it's one panel here.
Oh, because they're transfected cells, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so
and then that last comment is not clear at all.
For a non-scientific audience, I might take the first panel off and just show the zero, one drink, and three drinks.
Right. Yeah.
That's a good idea. Yeah, anything we can do to simplify that. I think the information is important, but it would be a little intimidating to approach that without reading the paper.
Right.
How about something like no alcohol, moderate alcohol, heavy alcohol or something?
Heavy or
just a thought.
Risky or something.
All three.
Got to run, sorry.
Okay, yeah, we're hitting the...
But it's three drinks is still...
Three drinks is not going to get you up to 120, 110.
Three drinks will get you to 25 millimolar. You know, three drinks will get you to 17 millimolar, which is the legal limit of intoxication in women, three drinks in an hour.
Yeah. So it's
very close. It's you know, in some women, three drinks will get you to 25 millimolar.
Yeah, if you're like 100 pounds.
Yeah. You could put four drinks there. Four drinks will certainly get you there.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay.
And one drink has an effect.
Okay, well, since we're kind of hitting the end of the hour, should I just run through the rest of these? And then, Michael, you and I can...
I'll sort of touch it up for this purpose. I understand what we're doing better, and I think I would change the language to make it much... Go ahead and show what you got.
Okay.
All right, then. Any other concerns? Again, I'm pushing people to start getting data collected, fill in the missing parts, whether they be from phase two or phase three. Dale and Bill, any comments?
Just one comment about the slide set. It's great, and I know we're focusing on content right now, but maybe in the end we can develop a little banner across the top, you know, that can be used in a templated way throughout the talk, and it might just be part of the CFAS logo, and maybe something like that, and maybe consider adding something like supported by NIAAA or something like that tacked on to the, you know, one side or the other.
Do people like this logo?
And just kind of brand these slides and be consistent. Don't make it get bigger and smaller from slide to slide. Just an immovable part on every slide.
Okay.
I agree, and the support part I think is important.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I have one favor to ask. This is Kathy. I've got to do a presentation tomorrow evening for a group of OBGYNs, and they treat women who are using substances. They're really focused on the drugs. They keep trying to say, well, we really need information on women that are using crystal meth and this. If anybody has a current chart, when you go online, you read there's so much information. I think a lot of it's misinformation, but if anybody has a slide or two or even a paragraph or something that they can email me so I can make an accurate slide depicting looking at various recreational, illegal drugs versus alcohol or something like that. That'd be great.
Tina, this the
Hi, Kathy, this is Elizabeth. I have done some stuff looking at kids with alcohol and methamphetamine versus just alcohol.
Mm-hmm. That would be great.
Yeah, let me see. If there's something I can do.
Yeah, my main concern is that it's accurate. I just don't trust some of what I'm reading and hearing from Kathy Sulick with some of her work and everything. I just want to make sure I get it right.
And Tina, does Otis have anything like that?
We may have lost her.
She had to get off. She was at a conference or something.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I'll check and see whether maybe Otis has something.
Okay, if anybody has anything, it is tomorrow evening, so last minute. But thank you, everybody.
All right.
Okay, and this is Jackie real quick. Tatiana had asked me to jump on the call, and it may not be an appropriate time to talk about this now. Perhaps, Ed and Jill, we could talk about this separately. I had sent two statements that typically go into some of our MTAs, our material transfer agreements, but I'm not sure that they're specific to this study because I'm not familiar with the ins and outs of what the steering committee or this grant actually set up as far as your guidelines about what would be done with the data. So there were two sentences in particular that I had sent yesterday, and I think you might have just kind of looked at them briefly, but if you could I sent you an email this morning, maybe read those very carefully and make sure that I'm not introducing some new element to this study by adding these two sentences to the material transfer agreement.
Okay. I didn't see anything. I think the data sharing part is reasonable.
Okay.
I'll look over it again. I looked at it this morning.
Okay. So if you think it's fine, I mean, it was not in anything we had previously for this study, but I know when you have samples that are in limited supply, obviously, getting the analysis data back so that it can be used as replication data or by others once the samples are depleted is really important. I wasn't sure if that was a role that we would take on or the administrative core or the informatics core housing that shared analysis data. I just wanted to be sure that what I was putting in this agreement was actually correct.
Yeah, I'll look over again, but it would be held in the repository.
So. Okay. Okay. Perfect then. All right. That's great. Thank you.
All right. Thanks. Anything from the Science Advisory Board? John, I think you're the only one still on. He's not there either. Okay. Thank you all. And,
all right.
We'll be talking again shortly.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.